Vayomru Elov Hagidin Alanu Basha Lemi Hodo Hazais. Lanu? Mamalachtecha Me'ain Tavai. What is your work? From where do you come? Mo Artsecha. What is your native home? The Ein Ze'am Ata. What nation are you from? A questionnaire. Okay? It's almost like he's giving blood. He's coming to donate a pint of blood. They're giving him a questionnaire to the question, you want to know everything there is to know about you. I guess not. Or how did he get on the ship to begin with? Okay, well, how did he get? So, okay, again, the girl falls on Yona. They cast, we learn many different interpretations, all the various things that they've done. And they ask him many questions. So let's see Pasuk test. Let's see another Pasuk. And he gives the answer. He says to them, Ivri Anoichi. And basically, we're going to see in the Mefarshim that this one word answers all of your questions. It's a remarkable answer to a long collection of answers. You're going to give a pint of blood. They want to know everything about you. You just write, I'm an Orthodox Jew. And that answers all the questions. Do you do drugs? Do you smoke? Do you do this? Do you do that? What ethnicity are you? I'm an Orthodox Jew. Oh, we know everything.
That's the question nowadays too. If you're attacked or this, Ivri
Anochi.
That's why you are. That is why you are.
Yeah, the thing is that I'm an Orthodox Jew. Okay,
you're going overboard. Okay, well, you should know. We're going to see over here in the forest. That's not what happened.
No.
They refused to throw him overboard. We're going to see that, and they tried to steer the boat back to dry land, and it was Yonah that basically threw himself overboard. It was we're going to see, but they were like terrified. Uh oh, we have over here precious cargo on board. And Enoch and Ami, we're not able to throw you overboard. We have to find a solution. Okay, let's see the Mefarshim over here. Ivri Anochi. V'yas Hashem Elokei Hashemayim Ani Yodei. I'm afraid I'm a God-fearing Jew. Asher Oso Es Hayom V'yas Hayabosha. That answers all of your questions. I'm not just Jewish. I'm Orthodox. I'm a Shomer Torah U'mitzvahs. Okay, saying that you're a Jew, unfortunately, doesn't say very much today. Adrab, unfortunately, we know that the higher you go, the lower you could fall. And being a Jew today, unfortunately, is associated with not such good things. Okay, we don't have to elaborate, but he's saying, no, I'm the real deal. I'm a Jew. Not just I'm a Jew, I'm basically an Orthodox Jew because I fear God. Fearing God means I am observant. I'm a Shomer Shabbos. And that's going to be the answer to all of these questions. Really, it's a remarkable dialogue between the question and the answer. Let's take a look over here at the Mefarsh. Let's first go to Mitzudos Sion. Page 414, in the Mitzudos Sion, he begins, 415, I'm sorry. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyeh bidvaroi. Mr. Cohen, you're spoiling me rotten. It's not good for me that I should come here, have a cup of coffee, and it's like, who am I? Thank you very, very much, Mr. Cohen. I really don't deserve this. You're a kohen also. You're not supposed to be mishamish me. You're a kohen. So I don't even know if halachically it's correct that you should be too kind to me. Hagidin al lilanu. Now there's a very important word over here, and that is the word lanu. Tell us for hagidin al lanu. Mitzudos Sinan, page 415. I'm a Yisrael. I'm only a Yisrael. Okay, Leviim. Only one here is a Levi. I think is Rav Meir, right?
Yeah.
We have two kohanim. We have Mr. Yerushalayim. I like to call you Mr. Yerushalayim. And Mr. Cohen, how do you pronounce your name? Jews? How do you pronounce your name? I'm sorry. How do you pronounce your name?
I say Jerusalem.
Jerusalem?
But in Hebrew, I spell it Yerushalayim.
Jerusalem. Yeah. So Jerusalem. Yeah, Jerusalem.
Pronounce it's from Polish. That is the Polish spelling for Jerusalem.
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 Instead of USA, Jerusalem, like you spell it here, the Poles spell it O-Z-O.
And you spell the Z?
Yeah.
O-Z-O. Okay. So I have two Kohanim and one Levi. Anyone else a Levi? Anyone else here?
I'm a Kohen.
Three Kohanim. Mamish, Ir Shakula Kohanim.
Oh, yeah, I know.
We have three Kohanim.
So, say again? The mud
Mordechai in Gittin Daf Nun Tes says by Isha Kula Kahanim Kayan Levi. All right, but by starting with Shlishi, you're allowed to call up women to the Torah.
Women.
Yes.
Okay. Does that mean we should have women in the Shir? The Mashlim, the Mashlim women.
Once
okay.
Then
okay. Vait. Let's go further. We have the Hagidah on page 415. Hagidah nalanu, tell us, Hoyl v'chol ha-garolos naflo alecha, since all of the garolos are full upon you, Hagidah ata nalanu ba'asher l'mi. Tell us, l'mi ha-ro'o ha-zois, ritzon loymar. Every time the Mefarish says something like the word ritzon loymar or the word kiloymar, it's a stop sign, which means we're now going to read something that's not literal. Ba mo hoya hachet ulemi chotosa shebisibosa ba lanu roas hasakana hazas. We want to know two things. Okay, number one, we want to know is what did you do and to whom did you do it to? Okay, there are two parts to a sin. What did you do? And was the sin a sin to Hashem, or was the sin to your fellow man? What's the two elements to the sin? Uchi'ilu yoimru im hoya bidvar ha'oishek. Are you a thief? Are you an extortionist? Are you some type? Oshek can mean many, many things, but basically means you've stolen someone else's money, you're a ganef, in a violent way. Im kein, if that's the case, evshu lachzir ha'oishek. Then guess what? We'll just wire the money. We have here Wi-Fi, okay? Every plane today has Wi-Fi. So we will wire the money to the one who's owed the money, and the storm will stop. Yeah?
Is anyone going to analyze the order of these questions?
We'll see.
It seems like a jumble to me.
Yes, it does seem so. I just like looked over very, 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 you know, very briefly, just run through very quickly, and relying upon you to fill in all the gaps when we go through the words. But yeah, there is the part of the discussion is why so many questions, and why does he give such a short answer? That's the major theme of the Mefarshim and the Nechanami. But right, you see right away the Mitsudos, who is usually the simplest interpretation. He right away is coming to dissect the question, and not only Lefi Pshuto Shel Mikra are there many questions. He's taking each question and breaking it down into multiple questions. They gave him a form. They gave him a doctor's office. He sit down, answer these 10 pages. Answer the form. So, first question over here is, the question over here is, we want to know over here, what was the nature of the chet? Was it because you're a ganef? If you're a ganef, that's okay, because we'll be able to deal with it. We'll be able to raise money and to return the money to the victim, and maybe then Hashem will allow us to live. Im ken evshul lachzir ha'ishak. Im hei rata lemi bedavar ha'giduf. Let's say you, giduf means to insult. Let's say you curse someone, you insulted someone, you're a politician, today you have to vote, and you led a smear campaign, right? Your whole campaign was just to put down the other party. They're very angry. They're angry at you. So you know what? So he writes over here. Look at this. It's unbelievable. He writes over here. It's shocking. The world never changes. For money, you can buy anything. Even a soini botzar. For money, you insulted someone. For enough money, you'll be able to be mefayes the person. Isn't that a sad reflection upon society? That for money you're able to, a person is insulted, you've damaged someone's dignity, their honor. So for enough money, I'll forgive you. I'll be appeased. Really? I mean, that's the way it is. That's a reality. But why should that be so? Why should money play a role in every element of our life? Why is that so? But that's how it. That's and the Mitzvah stuff. He says that's the way it is. You insulted someone, so we'll be mefayasim. I would have expected the mitzvah stuff just to stop there. If you v'imheirata l'mi bedavar ha-giduf, if giduf means to insult, or it can mean also to curse. If you insulted another person, you curse them publicly and you embarrass them, and they're very angry. So efshu l'fayasoy, we will dispatch a world class team of psychologists and rabbanim and clergy from all various denominations, and they'll know what to say. They'll know how they'll study this person's mind. They'll analyze him in advance, and they'll go to him and they'll know what to say to calm him down, to forgive you. Why does it have to say here lefaisoi bimamoin? It's a very disturbing word that the mitzvah. Why does the mitzvah's David have to say? It doesn't say in the pasuk. Why is he saying that? I guess that's the way the world works. Unfortunately, money talks.
And damages, you have all,
a libel suit.
Okay, but that's not what. That's the first part. A libel suit in this world. Yeah, you sue for some
money.
No.
See this something which would totally brainwash American society. Today we all know that a person, if someone says boo to you, so the next thing is I'm suing you for $1 billion. Okay, yeah. And if you're lucky, they'll make a settlement for $200 million.
Why is that America? That's the Gemara from the beginning talks about compensation.
Nezek, Mesechta. Bavakama, there's something called Nezek, Tsar, Sheves, Ripui, Boishes. There's no payment for psychological torment. What? Ripui is doctor bills. Boishes is not a. Boishes is true, but not to what the in society. The way. It's a real. Monetary value of boishes, which the Gemara discusses, what is the calculation? But it's a one time payment. Right. You have to say boishes is not a payment that for the rest of your life, I need now millions of dollars. The numbers that are thrown around today in secular society, and people are winning, and are getting, are astronomical. Sums of money that have absolutely no source in the world of halacha.
Okay.
And it does not mean that you're not entitled.
He just made a $2 billion settlement today.
Yeah, round up.
Who? What?
Monsanto.
Over what? Allegations of.
Somebody, two people said they had cancer as exposure to their product.
Okay. All right. Okay. I don't know. Okay. But 200. So what is the value? So in halacha, the most you can charge a person is the value. No. Okay. So fine. All of the bills of the most expensive psychiatrists and psychologists are not going to add up to $200 million. The value of a human being is a slave. How much is a person, the most you can pay for a person is his life. How much is a person worth in the slave market? So today there is no slavery in America, but if you were to, but there is an evaluation. Like I told you once, the Pentagon makes an evaluation of a person. A baby, a child born, is worth, according to the Pentagon, $7 million for the United States. That was the last that I read. And then 1 year went down to 6 million, it went back up. And that's an infant. That's an infant.
Contribution to GNC?
Yes. And they need that number. They need to give every newborn in this country a number. It is critical for the Pentagon to have a number when they plan Social Security, they plan Medicare, Medicaid, all of these programs, they plan the budget. They need to know how much a person is worth. It's critical in government to know a person's value, and that's all based upon statistics of what will a person likely contribute to society. Some people will be a Bill Gates, and they'll be paying taxes to the country. They'll be paying over the course of their lives to the country billions of dollars in taxes, and they'll enhance society. The products that they will invent will be an enhancement which is priceless. And then there are people that are just recipients. They're on programs their whole life, and they're takers. And they take. And they're just a loss for society. So there are statistics. What is the balance? The average person does get a job, does work, does contribute, does do things. They need to know a number. So today, in ancient times, you want to know the max value of a person, you take him to the slave market. How much is this fellow worth on the block? They put him up. There's an auction. We have now a white male, 30 years old. He has this skill, that skill. Are there any bids? Yes, $100. Like selling Elias. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's right. When you judge individuals, that's how you judge. And now he's also judged if you judge individual. Let's say in the divorce court, how much the award paying for the wife and for this depend the same judge could afford one more depending on the individual.
Right, right.
If he's let's say a high earner, he will pay more. If he's
okay, exactly. So there, a person has a value. Do these persons making this, are they worth in the society $200 million? You say they made a settlement.
But it's
are they worth? Are they worth? What?
More punitive because they want to send a
message. Okay, that's a kanas. Dine kanasa. Society is sending a kanas. But who's getting the money over here? The money is not going to the government. The money is going to. So the person, okay, you're saying very powerful ideas. And in a hanami, these are very complicated issues, and it requires a lot of understanding, which I have totally no clue, no background. But generally, the way the Torah awards monetary compensation for harm appears to be, at face value, very, very different than in secular society how people are awarded money, they're compensated. Let's just leave it with that. So you write over here, it says, Lefai soy b'mamon, if you give a person enough money, then they will be in peace. Now, Rachmana Litzlan, when there's a broken engagement, there's a very, very important matter in is that if a person, for no good reason, just says, I have cold feet, I don't have any, there's no crime that's been committed, there's no new discovery that I was not aware of, I committed myself to marry you in 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it is, and you know what? I have cold feet and I want out. Why? Did you discover some new information? Did I mislead you? Did I do something to you? If you gave me your word, you have to follow through on your commitment. I want out of the engagement. So today it's understood that you have to give a lot of money. A lot of money to get mechila from the party, from the person who was insulted, who is the victim of not going through with the marriage. In those type of situations where one person wants it, sometimes it's mutual. Sometimes an engagement just dissipates mutually. But many times, one party very, very much wants to proceed. And the other party just, no one knows why. And there's nothing, no scandal. So it's self-understood in today's society that there has to be a very significant amount of money paid to get mechila from the other party. And if there are tanoim written by the Hasidim, it's very, we've discussed many times, by Hasidim, they write, they sign the tanoim at the engagement. And that becomes a very, very big nightmare because there's no way to break that document. Marriage, there is a way out. There's a get, but how do you get out of a document that's been signed and been accepted, a tanoim, if there's a broken engagement? So they say by Hasidim, they wouldn't do this today anymore, but they say, better, if you know you want out, better get married and get a divorce 5 minutes later, then just don't get married. Because for marriage, there's a way out. By the way, you asked me the ksuba. When you get married, you have to pay the ksuba, which is $60,000, at least $60,000, or something around that. So for marriage, a get, there's a get. And there is a payment for the ksuba, that it says, but for tanoim, there is no way out. That is why by many, you don't do tanoim anymore. You do not sign the tanoim by the engagement. So when do you do the tanoim? So the truth is, you don't need to do it all together. Because if you come to the wedding and you're getting married, so the tanoim is only, what does it say in the tanoim? You commit yourself to get married. So if you're at the wedding and you're dressed up in your gown and the chassan has a nice new suit and everyone, the band is playing Od Yeshama, So why do you need to know him? You already made it to the finish line. So then really, according to the letter of the law, if you're not going to sign the tanoim at the engagement to commit yourself to get married, and you've already come to the wedding, you do not need to sign the tanoim, do the tanoim. And in fact, there are people today who don't do it anymore. In Yeshiva University, there are many Rashivas that they don't do, not many, but there are who do not do it. In the Litvish Olam, the more as why you spell Litvish Olam, but the more traditional Olam, they still do it because they're afraid to be mevatel a minog Yisrael. Since for generations we've been signing the Tanoim, today we don't want to sign the Tanoim at the engagement because we're afraid there may be a broken engagement and there's no way out. But we don't want to just ignore the tradition of having Tanoim, so they do it. Before 5 minutes before they do it before the ksuba. So in essence, how long are the tanoim in effect? From the time they start playing Od Yeshama until they reach the chuppah. That's the tanoim. That is the lifespan of the tanoim.
Sometimes they signed the ksuba before.
No, you never, never. No. You signed the tanoim before. Oh, that's a different question. Should the witnesses sign the ksuba before the chuppah, or should they sign it under the chuppah?
Because when they sign already, it's already, that's it, huh?
No. The ksuba is not a marriage document. Okay, this is not, we're going sidetracked. The ksuba is not, it says in the Gemara, an isha gets married bekesef shtar bia. The ksuba is not shtar. Okay. Nothing to do with zero. We don't do shtar today. We do kesef. We don't do beer. We don't do shtar. The ksuba is nothing more than a financial arrangement, a basically like a life insurance policy. That this woman says, I'm not going to marry you. If I marry you, what's going to prevent you from giving me a divorce tomorrow? So the husband says, I'm not going to divorce you so fast, because if I do, it's going to cost me a lot of money. So if the supper is burnt, or there's no supper on the table,
you'll live with it.
I'll deal with it, because it's cheaper for me to go to Essen on Coney and spend $25 for a dinner than to pay you $60,000 for a divorce.
No, in other words, don't consider it as your last supper.
Don't consider it. That's all it's about. The document says, in essence, in case of death or divorce, I owe you a lot of money. And you have a nice safe of writing beautiful letters, and you frame it on the wall so you can look at it for the rest of your life every time you walk into your home. And you show it's a very good idea to do that. I'm not joking, because at least you know where it is. Really. You know where it is, because if you don't go hang it up, make it into a piece of art and hang it up on your wall, chances are within 2-3 months, you have no clue, your wife has no clue where her ksuba is. And then she's living in sin. Not really living in sin, it's not the end of the world, but it's not ideal not to know where your ksuba is.
You'd be surprised, the women know where it is.
They know where it is, I don't know. My father, Zichron Livracha, he wrote, you know, if a person loses a ksuba, so there's a special ksuba, a replacement ksuba. A replacement ksuba, the irchisa, a ksuba which got lost. My father, he arranged a ksuba de irchisa for probably just about every balabas in the shul. In the shul. Because basically, over the time, when their children got, what happened? Their children got married. And they, you know, oh, they're all excited, or they made it, they got ksuba, and then they started wondering, where's my ksuba? And then they just happened to mention to my father, you know, I don't know where my ksuba is. So my father, it's a big deal, don't worry, we'll make another ksuba, the irchasa. So, kachav, I used to do, because I typed it all up, I had it all printed out, I used to enter the names, and then late in the night when no one was watching, they would come over like 11 o'clock at night, and we had two witnesses were there, and a Makabo Kenyan. I'm not joking. Came out every, and we had very nice. It was a very beautiful custom-made ksuba. I used to do it on the computer. It was very nice. Came out every Balabas. I probably still have on the computer records of all the ksubas.
In Kingsway, every wedding which took place is registered in the minutes, whatever, I don't know.
In the registry.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Years ago, a person from Florida came, our husband and wife, the apartment burned down there. And they needed like so much.
Yeah,
they
came and they found the record, and based on that record, they
The marriage certificate.
Yeah.
It's evidence. It's just evidence. Okay. It's not. It halachically means nothing.
But
it's evidence in secular court, and even Bezdin also circumstantial evidence that they did get married.
Yeah,
it's evidence. Okay. Okay. Oh yeah. Right.
When you get married, you have two sukkahs. One gets registered, it stays in
the Bezdin.
Wow.
That's very good. The truth is, the Gemara, the halachal ma'is, if a person does not have a ksuba, it doesn't matter. He has the same obligation. Right. Because Satakonis Bezdin. A person does not have a ksuba, he gets divorced, Rahman al-Islam, and he said, and the wife says, okay, pay me the ksuba. Pay me the $60,000. So he can say to her, I already paid it to you. Prove me. Show me the ksuba. Give me your ksuba. Prove it. I don't know where it is. So technically speaking, if you can produce the bill, then I'm not paying you one penny. That would be technically correct. However, Chazal said, it doesn't matter. Even if she can't find the ksuba, you must have a receipt that you paid it. We put the burden on you. And if you don't have the receipt that you paid it, then just because she lost it, it doesn't really make a difference. You're still obligated. We're going off the topic. The point I want to make over here is, the Yesoides can be summed like we always say here in the Shir, that money isn't everything. It is the only thing. And that's what it says over here. Very surprised why he has to say that. My melachtecha, again, the first white line on page 415, my melachtecha. They asked Yona, what is your occupation? What is your profession? Maybe you have you're involved in some shady business. Noyas anoshim mirubim, and you cause harm. The word noyas means you cause harm. And this kind of literally, isn't the word Yonah itself means harm. I have to go back and show you this. We learned this a while ago. The word Yonah comes from the word onah. Onah means to cause someone pain and suffering. There's a lot of talk about the word onah, Yonah, and if the whole sefer is called Yonah, which is a cousin of the word onah, which means harm, pain, suffering, that's a very disturbing insight. How can this fellow be named Yonah if Yonah means to cause pain? What parent would name their child suffering? Okay, what's your name? My name is Suffering Smith. What kind of name is that? Ben Oni. She called him Binyamin, the son of my affliction. Ben, and his father called him, and what did it say in the pasuk? Ben Yimini, and we have to come back to this, but the word over here is Rimiya v'hoi noyas anoshim mirubim. You cause a lot of pain to many people. Ad shloiteda mi v'mi, to the point where you do not know who to give the money back to. Shloiteda mi v'mi heimo lahachzir lohem ho'eshik. This is a very popular topic of discussion. Halach of a person is like steals from someone. And you chayzer b'shuva, person's a ganef. He's in the business, whatever he does, and he steals from people all the time. And now he's chayzer b'shuva. How do you pay them back? There's no way you can identify your victims. So what does it say in Shulchan Aruch? You should give the money to a public facility. You should give the money, do something for the tzibur to buy. Time of the Gemara. These are outdated. To build a bathhouse. To build,
it's assumed that the victims
will end up deriving benefits, and that is where you're paying back the victim. Let's say the victim's already passed on, so they're descendants. If you do something for the community, a public service which normally ordinarily costs money, it costs money. And then these people are your victims, or at least their yarshim, will benefit from your the service that you're providing free to society. That is, in essence, a form of payment, but not l'chatchil, of course, but b'di'evet. So they asked him, what crime did you commit? Did you steal from many people where it's to the point where it's impossible to pay them back? Actually, teidam mi v'mi heim malachzei l'hama ishek. Where do you come from? Again, you have to read between the lines. Where do you come from? Shema ashakta b'makom shabasa b'sham v'ulay rav ha'derech v'ein lovoy shama lahachzir ha'eshek. It's too far. The distance is too great to return the theft. We can't return. Ma artzecha ritzayin loyamar shema asisu davar hefech minak artzecha. Now here he's eating over here. In this question, the mitzuda is really, really pushing it. And the other ones, you know, it's not such a doichik. But here he's really going far. My artzecha. What is the nature of your? Doesn't just mean where do you come from, your land. What are the customs, the norms, the conventions? What?
Derech.
The Derech Eretz. Oh, he's saying Derech Eretz. Shema asisa davar hepech minag artzicha. In this country, if you doing this mode of conduct is a mitzvah, it's a lechatchila. But maybe where you come from, that mode of conduct is considered to be detestable. So explain to us where your origins, where you come from, and what is their heritage, what's not their heritage. Shema asisa davar hebech minag artzicha uchiluch atasa luchulam. You've sinned against the entire society. Umi yachol lefayis es kulam. Maybe then you're not going to be able to appease them. Uvei mize am ota. What nation? Now here he writes mem hashimush. When it says mize, it should really say eze. The Eze Am Ota. What's the word Mize? So he says Mem Hashimosh K'mayi Hafuch Kiilu Omar U. You really should put the Mem not in front of the word Ze, but the Mem really belongs in between the Vav and the Aleph. U Mei Eze Mokoyim. You see what he's doing over here? He's a very sophisticated cut and paste job. He's taking the mem out of the word mize, putting before the a, which should really say umei eze am ot. That would be more grammatically correct. Ritzon loymar mihu elokecha, who is your God? Uchilu yoimu pen osis odavar shloy kadas elokecha. Maybe you violated a law of your religion. The einim came mokem lefaisa the moment. Oh, it's a religious matter. Then you can't appease your God with money. Why not? Why can't you appease your God with money? Mais in mechol yoyim. No?
Certainly.
What?
Certainly in churches.
In church, right? So even among the Jews, you know, the Chazal say, Ka beides Hashem ehoincha. Did we learn yesterday? You give tzedakah and fais the poor. What did Doniel advise Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar became a Baal Teshuvah, the Seif Yamav. And what did he say to you? He had the bad dream. And the dream said, you're toast. And what did Daniel say to Nebuchadnezzar? Support the poor. Enact programs for the poor. Okay, welfare, social programs for the poor. Help the poor. And if you'll do that, Hashem will delay your destruction. And he did. He did. That was a shocking thing for Nebuchadnezzar to go support the poor, to give tzedakah. It shook up the world. Changed the world. Daniel, you know, we don't know how far that mentality, where that today, Baruch, we live in a country, Baruch Hashem, the whole world to a very large degree, there's something called social programs. Now, unfortunately, it's gone to an extreme which can destroy society. Okay, you can totally destroy society. Communism, socialism, redistribution of the wealth, which is a churban, but the idea is a very noble idea. At least when it's done, when it's done in a balanced and in a correct way, because there are people in society, unfortunately, that can't help themselves. Okay, we all know that to be true. There are definitely elements of society that are just not capable of supporting themselves, and they need help. And the concept that it is society's duty to help them, that's a very incredible chesed. Oilam chesed yibane. Again, it's abused today. Because today, once you're just giving out free money, so unfortunately people who are very capable of helping themselves just take advantage and they milk the system and they destroy the world. But the idea is a very powerful idea. It does not appear that this idea existed in ancient times. If a person could not help themselves, a person was incapable, he just faded away. He died.
The safety net is a modern invention.
It's a modern thing. And people just, you can't help yourself, so no, that's it. Go out into the street, you're homeless. Eventually you'll catch a cold, you'll get pneumonia, and you'll die. And someone will come. Will they even take away your body? Maybe not, they'll just kick it to the side. Why should someone waste their time taking away your body? They'll just kick it to the side. And it'll eventually disintegrate into dust. That was the mentality of the world before, in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Who cares? Look, when they killed the Haruge Beitar, what do? They didn't bury the bodies. For 7 years, the bodies just was a pile in the sky. They just let the bodies there. They let the bodies just sit and rot out in the open. They don't care.
Yeah, no, well, that was supposed to be like an object lesson as well.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, to terrify the
Chazal said that it was not, that the first ones who went into battle that felt it was their duty in war to bury the dead of the victims were Klal Yisrael. The message Mika Amchoy Yisrael, one of the midrashim says that the nations of the world were blown away that when the Jews went to battle and they won the battle and the dead, their victims were lying all over the battlefield, the Jews went, picked up the dead bodies and gave them a dignified burial. And it blew them away. This, no one ever cared. You go to war, you kill the enemy, so let the enemy rot in the field. They had battle in the battlefield. It's not our problem. Let them rot. The Jews, they went and they buried the dead. But that was only Klal Yisrael, the Umos HaElam, who cares? And Daniel went and he told Nebuchadnezzar, you're finished. He had a dream. Nebuchadnezzar had faith in Daniel and the dream indicated that Nebuchadnezzar's days are numbered. And what should I do? And Daniel said, why don't you introduce into society social programs, programs for the poor? And he did. And by doing so, what happened? There was a stay on his sentence. Nebuchadnezzar did not, his death was delayed. And what did Chazal say about Daniel? Not a good idea. What you did is very noble, what you did, but he was criticized because it was not, even in Chazal's opinion, a good thing to give good advice to a Russia. He gave advice to a Russia, even better, Nebuchadnezzar should die immediately. Sooner better than later. And who knows what would have been if Daniel would indeed have not given him advice. Today, in the modern world, would it have still trickled down the degree of chesed that is observed by every country to a degree, some more, some less. Probably the United States, the most of all. So who knows if in today's modern world, you have to look at the whole world history, how ideas and concepts were introduced in ancient times, what would have been if it would not have been introduced at that point in time of Nebuchadnezzar? Would it have been introduced at a later point in history? Probably, maybe, yeah, maybe not. And even if it would have been, would its effect trickle down to the 21st century in the way that it has? No one knows. No one has any way of knowing these things. These are impossible things to even think about. But in any event, over here, his question over here in this pasuk over here is who is your God? And God, you can't be mefayis with money. So I just pointed out is that you see by Daniel did tell Nebuchadnezzar to be mefayis Hashem with money. What money? To give money to the poor. And by giving money to the poor, his life would be extended. So I'm just coming to make this observation, is that what do you mean that you can't be mefayis Hashem with money? You can. Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar to give money to the poor, and that will be appeals to Hashem. And it worked. So I'm not sure what he means by this. All right, next. Pasuk Tes in the Mitzvah. This is Ivri Anochi. I'm a Jew. Now notice he says he did not say Yehudi. This is a big topic. There are two words for a Jew. There is Ivri and Yehudi. Mordechai is an Ish Yehudi. Hayad Bishushan HaBirah. Haman would pass the palace every day, and Mordechai went out of his way to be there, to know his schedule. When Haman would be passing the palace, probably had one of those new apps, you know, when the bus is coming, so you know exactly when everyone converges on the bus. It's amazing that you take the bus to go to Manhattan, you have an app, and it's quiet, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's like the CIA descends upon some criminal. Out of nowhere, 20 people descend on this spot, and the bus pulls up. How in the world do they everyone know to come at the same time? The answer is every single person has one of those magic devices. Right? They should just put them in the brain already. Just what I have to carry them with you, just put it in the brain, put it in the head already. And they knew when they know when the bus. So therefore sending over here is Mordechai, he knew exactly when he knew he had the Haman app. He knew when Haman would be passing the palace. He arrived 10 seconds before to do what? To sit down and to spit on him. Oh, Haman is passing by. Everyone is going to get up and bow down. I'm not getting up. I'm not bowing down. Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachave. Lahachis. I'm not going to give you any covet. So here... And what was his banner? Ish Yehudi, his Ba'ama Yehudi. Avraham Avinu, what was his motto? Avraham or Ivri, I'm an Ivri.
Well, he couldn't call him Yehudi yet.
There wasn't Yehuda. There wasn't Sheva Yehuda. Obviously, there wasn't Sheva Yehuda. So the question is, what about Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe, who said, I'm an Ish Mitzri. That was Moshe. Was one of the reasons why he was not buried. One of the reasons, besides the Chet HaMeriva, but because he said, "I'm an Ish Mitzri," Hitzilanu Miyad Haroim, and Yosef says, "Ivri." He said, "I'm an Ivri." Yosef said, "I'm an Ivri." By the Sarah Mashkim of Sarah Oifim, he said, "I'm an Ish Ivri. I'm proud to be an Ish Ivri." So the question over here is: Yon is long, long after Matan Torah. L'chara Yonah should be more like Mordechai, who has yet to exist, but he should say, I'm a Yehudi. Why did he say, I am an Ivri? Now you'll say, maybe he was from Shevet Yehuda. We had this discussion, he came from Shevet Zevulun, or from Shevet Asher.
Or the land of Yehuda.
Both Zevulun and Asher are not from the land of Yehuda, they're up north, they're from the land of Yisrael, and we don't even know when he lived. We don't even know. We're not even so sure. Well, we assume he's now at the time of the Golos of the Aseres Hashvatim. So that's the time when there is a Yehuda versus a Yisrael, right? Let's assume that when did Yonah live? Yonah's living in the middle of the Tekufa of the Golos of the Aseres Hashvatim. And that's why he did not want to give Musar to Nineveh, because halavai, Nineveh should be destroyed, and then there will not be a golos of the Aseres Hashvatim. Adarabba, let them go, let them all rot. We'll save Klal Yisrael. So if that's correct, then Klal Yisrael at this point in time are divided between the Malchus of Yehuda and the Malchus of Yisrael. So then, who does he identify with? He identifies with the Malchus of Yisrael. So to say I'm a Yehudi is a bit problematic. Mordechai was already living long, long after the Golos of the Aseres HaShvatim. Mordechai was living in between the Churban Yisrael and the Bayis Sheni. The Golos of the Aseres HaShvatim took place about 200 years or 150 years before the Churban Bayis Rishon. So they're all gone. They're gone. So who's left? Only Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin. And the whole Klal Yisrael is called by the name of Yehuda. So it's not a kasha that a Jew is identified as being Ish Yehudi, because that's all that's left. But at this point in time, if you're going to say I'm a Yehudi, you're taking sides. It's like you go to a wedding, and they say to you, "Oh, I didn't know. How did you get to this? From which side are you from? I didn't know they're already fighting. I didn't know the Chosin and Kali. You want to know which side I'm from? Which side I'm on? At the wedding already, they're ready. As machlekes between you don't get the joke. Okay. So if you're saying over here I'm a Yehudi, if I am a Yehudi, you're saying that I'm not from the Malchus, but it's not so. He really identifies more with the Malchus of Yisrael. Ad kedei kach, the reason why he's trying to commit suicide is in order to save Yisrael. Yehuda, we learned a number of times, the Navi severely criticizes the Malchus of Yehuda. They were rooting for the doom, for the end of the Malchus of Yisrael. They said, good for you, you're a bunch of Rishayim, get what you deserve, and not only that, we can't wait to let it happen sooner than later, that way we will come and take over your territory. All of your assets will go into foreclosure, and who will take over? Us. So get lost. Ashur, speed up the process. Get these Jews out of here. Bring them to Golis and do whatever you want so we can take over their territory. So you a Yehudi, Adarabba, was very happy that's what it said. We learned that.
No, but God complained to them.
Yeah, that's nasty.
Gave them to Chacha.
And terrible. Risharm, how dare you say that? In Echanami. So we have to understand that at face value, there's a lot more depth to this, but at a simple face value, this is a big, big topic here. He announces I'm an Ish Ivri. And the question is, why is he selecting with Ivri? Ivri seems to be outdated. That's old school. That was Avraham Avinu was an Ish Ivri. We're much more advanced now. Now we're holding a tekufa where we're part of Klali, so we're much more sophisticated. So what is this all about? This has to be discussed. But in the meantime, over here, the Mitzudo says, he says, Ivri Anochi Ka'aymer, Ein Lechem Lishol, first to set up Pshat, Ein Lechem Lishol, Kol HaShe'elos Halalu, don't ask me all of these questions. Ki Lo Yichatasi Leven Adam. I have not sinned. Okay, here's the end. Okay, so let's go back to Pasuk. The Mitzudo started is saying a mouthful. According to the Mitzudo Stav in the Pasuk Ches, you can probably break it down into 10 questions. I didn't count. You go break down each question into its parts, there are probably 10 questions. So Yonah says, what are you asking me so many questions? I'll give you one word that answers all of your questions. I'm an Ivri. Oh, an Ivri. An Orthodox Jew. It's a min bifnei atzmai. You now, I got it. You'll understand the big picture. Koimer, eluchem lishol kol hasha'elos halalu. Ki loicha tosi leben adam. So look what he says here. A Jew is not a sinner. A Jew is a person that's not a thief. That's what an ivri is. I'm an honest, standing member of society. So he's learning, I'll answer the last question. And the answer to the last question is koilel, an answer to all the questions. And just to give more of a flavor to his words, he says, V'eshashem elokei hashamayim ani yorei. It just he's just saying very simply, just an embellishment. That he has sinned to Hashem. Now, I told you, in our generation, you see, it's not a kasha why he has to say, I'm an Ivri, and I'm a God-fearing man. Because Rachmana Litzlan, today, most of Jews will not identify as saying, it's Hashem, Elokei Hashamayim, Ani Yorei. Okay, today you're a Jew, so it means nothing. I'm a Jew, I'm intermarried, I eat, I have absolutely no restrictions, it means nothing. Today it means, today you have to say that you're a observant Jew. Okay, even that, that's, I think it's a much better term than saying you're orthodox. Being orthodox doesn't mean anything either, unfortunately. Okay, what does it mean you're orthodox? You really a shomer Shabbos? The way you're doing everything, you're doing the way you were taught to do. We all know that Orthodox Jews, unfortunately, are in the news, are caught doing things which don't make us look not very proud of. I think the better term when you want to say you're a Jew means I am an observant Jew. That is a very powerful expression, because. Well, observant, even someone who is reformed, conservative, someone, you know, a reformed Jew who's a tinuk shenishba, who knows from nothing, and is sincere in observing what he was taught to do, in many ways, I'm saying something very controversial, is more with the program than an Orthodox, someone who identifies with the Orthodox community and is a ganav. And when no one's watching, he's a naif, and he's this and he's that. But it comes Shabbos, you know, you take out your strimal, you put on the strimal, you put on your black hat. Here I am. So tell me, who's more with the program? The Reformed Jew who's sincere in what he knows to do, or the supposedly Orthodox Jew who is a phony? And also, in my book, the one who's a tinuk shenishba and is sincere, this is what Shabbos, I've been taught Shabbos is, and I don't deviate from the script. I do what I'm supposed to do. He, in my book, is called an observant Jew. And the Orthodox Jew, who, just a game, the whole religion is just a game, an opportunity to make money, is a Jew. But could you call him an observant Jew?
Depends what you mean by observe. Yeah, people like to call themselves observe because they watch you do it.
Okay, so this, Rabbi Sayed, the reason why this is what I'm trying to bring out here. What it says here, every pasuk we read here, it's very critical because this is what we read moments before the end of Yom HaKippurim, and every word of Sefer Yonah is heaping. With Musar, and the words are Yikam Yom HaKippurim. It's only a few minutes before the day is over. The gates are going to be closed. Your fate will be sealed. Vayom Aleihem, Ivri Anochi. I'm a Jew, but that doesn't mean anything. V'yes Hashem Elokei Hashamayim Ani Yorei. Just because you're Jewish doesn't mean anything. Being Jewish demands observance, demands action. And action is summarized in one concept, Yiras Shamayim. There's no Yiras Shamayim, there is nothing. The biggest bracha, the most important bracha you give a person, you should be a Yiras Shamayim. You should have Siyata Deshmaya, Hakol Bidei Shamayim, Chutz Miyiras Shamayim. The biggest bracha you can give a person beyond doubt, beyond any question, go for a bracha to a rashiva, to a gadol hador. So they don't give a bracha. So they give whatever they want to give you. But sometimes they say, what do you want? What bracha? They're testing you. They want to know. They want to see your values. What do you want? You're coming in for bracha. What do you want? I want a shidduch. I want parnasa, refuah. I want these things. So if you say to them, I want, okay, very well. He said, I want success, siyata deshmaya, in being a yorei shamayim. If you get that, you got it all. You got it all. If you have siyata deshmaya in being a yorei shamayim, you got it all, because from all the bracha memela flows from yirah shamayim. Now, ha'akol bidei shamayim chutz miyirah shamayim. That's up 100%. It's not totally in a bracha. It's right. It's not a bracha. You have to work on it. But there's no question about it that there are certain conditions in your life which make it easier. Make if you're in an environment and you don't happen to be in the wrong place, the wrong time, be influenced by the wrong people, or you happen to be blessed to be in an environment of chush of a people, then. You know, it's a siyata d'shmaya which helps you achieve that goal. And look at this, I'm Jewish, but that means nothing. I am not just Jewish, I'm a God-fearing person of Hashem, asher osa es hayam v'es hayabosha. Let's go further. Next words of the Metzudos David, on page 417, asher osa, who has made es hayam v'es hayabosha, ritzoy neloymar. Again, he adds this word in the law, which everything he's telling us, the mitzvah stuff is totally not literal. It's not his derech. The mitzvah stuff from all the mefarshim is always the one that is the most simplistic, the pashtun. Always giving you the simplest translation, and yet here he keeps on saying, I'm not going to give you a literal translation. Everything here is a metaphor. You got to read in between the words. You have to go deep, deep down. He's really departing, in at least these psukim here, from his derech, his whole approach to giving the perush on the psukim. Ritzon Elaymar, Kumaisha also Esayabasha. The same way Hashem, look at this thing, he's saying a whole drush. It almost sounds like you're reading a medrash here. Kimo, just like Hashem, he's reading backwards. Just like Hashem created dry land, Kenasa Esayam. He also created the sea. Uvichol Mokoim Moshlo Yodo, Hashem's hand, his reach is everywhere, even where we are today in the Yam. Uchilu Yoimar, it's as if he's saying to the people, Hine. Gam bayom motzo oisi yad Hashem. You can't run. And we always say, and by the goyim they say, you can run, but you can't hide. But by the Jews, you can't even run. Hashem is so powerful, you can't even run. You think you're running? He's right there with you. He's helping you run. Gam bayom motzo oisi yad Hashem. Chilu yachricheini, Hashem is forcing me leleches linabois al ninveh. This is, he's speaking to Hashem. This is, I'm not really sure what he means by that. I made a foolish mistake. For nothing I ran away. I foolishly thought, I thought here in the Yam, Hashem would not be able to reach me. And look at that. Hashem over here has come, has reached me. He has sent me a message here in the middle of the Yam. Okay, we have listened to another middle. Let's take a little Rashi, quick little Rashi. Pasuk Ches. I'm back on page 414. 414. Hagida no lanu ba'asher lemi lemi chotosa asher b'shvil kein horo hazois lanu. So he is Rashi is a little bit more simplistic than the Mitzudos David. The Mitzudos David said it was a double question: what did you do, and who is the victim? Who is the victim? And what? Why? And the Mitzudas David added some very important information. Why would they want to know who the victim is? Because maybe we can make restitution. Since our lives are on the line, we will accept upon ourselves to make restitution to appease your victim, so we should not all have to die because of you. So we want to know who is the victim. And I guess it really includes, if you want to know who the victim is, it really also includes what was the crime. What was the crime, and who is the victim? Maybe we can do something. Ma milachtecha shema pashata be'uma nu secha. What is your occupation? Are you in finance? Are you in construction? Are you in computers? Maybe you're a hacker. You're a computer programmer, and you know how to beat the system, and we want to know. Maybe you're the one who's responsible why all of the bank's computers are not working today. So tell us, what is your profession? We can figure out exactly what you did. And we have people in the underground Russian, part of Trump's team back in Russia, who can go... They're going to come after me now? They can go and can figure out, you know, we can make restitution. Or may I in Tavoy. Where do you come from? Shema al anshe oisei makom nigzra gezera os va'afilu ein ataba. Now here Rashi over here says something that the mitzvah stuff did not want to go near, and he's saying a very fascinating concept. And he's saying maybe in Shemayim there was a gezera that a certain nation is coming to an end. Okay, we find that some sort of ancient civilizations are buried underneath many layers of mud, and who knows. Maybe in Shemayim there was a decision that this civilization, this country, that's it. Hashem has had enough of them. There's going to be a tsunami. There's going to be an earthquake. There's going to be a hurricane. It's over. A volcano is going to erupt, and they're gone. And guess what? You escaped. You escaped. No, 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 no. No one from this country can escape. And that is why. So we know, we have records of all the countries that have gone under. Maybe you're from one of those nations, and that's why, that will explain to us the situation. What would the nafka mean? I don't know. Maybe there is. They have a solution for that also. Even if you maybe you're not a native to that society, just the fact that you are a witness to what occurred there, Hashem wants to put an end to you. Maybe it's a matter of a nation. It's not a matter of a location, a society. It's a matter of a nation. Okay, and next Rashi, that's it. So Rashi is really very makatsi. It's not really eating. The Mitzudos broke it open much, much more than Rashi. Rashi, obviously, a lot of secrets in Rashi is a little bit different than Mitzudos, but it definitely begins to open up the issues which will, Yirtzeh Hashem, continue tomorrow. Before we conclude, I want to wish, I saw today, got an email from Yeshiva University, and they had a very beautiful write-up. We didn't know about this, that Rabbi Orlian was honored last week. Rabbi Dr. Orlian was honored last week in Yeshiva University, celebrating 60 years of teaching, as serving as a professor, a Rebbe, in Yeshiva University. And it's a beautiful write-up, beautiful pictures with your wife and your children, and the president of the yeshiva, and the ceremony, and the awards. So we want to wish you a hearty mazel tov on this incredible accomplishment. 60 years is there. It says in the word that one of the Amoraim, he made a party when he reached 60. Why? When he reached 60, so the word talks about different reasons why, but obviously the number 60 is a very great, and to be malamed Torah la'ama Yisrael for 60 years, the fundamentals of Yiddishkeit is a davar choshev ad ma'od, and in this suchus should be gezunt, arichas yomim, and nachas and bracha to you and your entire family. Mazel tov. Okay, we're going to take a short